Growing up in Canada, we have what is called CanCon, short for Canadian Content. When it comes to music, more specifically radio, it means that a certain percentage of content aired must be Canadian. This percentage has only increased with each decade, where it is now at an estimated 40%. This rule was established in the early 70s when Canadian music, for the most part, was found to be largely ignored by programmers and audiences alike, forcing stations to play Canadian music. Forcing the public to listen to Canadian music was, in theory, supposed to foster awareness and spark interest in homegrown acts. And while many bands ended up benefiting from the imposed rules, our band included, it still felt like it was done under duress. Even when domestic bands get the support from their country, without the help of enforced regulations, the support seems almost out of patriotic duty. Maybe that's me and my natural glasses-half-empty disposition shining through here, but it's a lot like sports. If you were born in Toronto, you are automatically a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. If you were born in Boston, you're automatically a Red Sox fan. If you were born in Italy, you automatically root for Italy in the World Cup, and so on and so on. There's an automatic allegiance there that comes naturally. And we can all name bands that are so big inside our respective countries, but are virtual unknowns everywhere else. Being the big fish in the little pond has never really appealed to me, and I employ the same attitude as a music fan. I cannot, for the life of me, get behind a band and call myself their fan simply because we are both from Canada. Deep down inside, I know a lot of people force their own hands to like something domestic, but because they want to be supportive. A very nice gesture, a very nice position to take, and it's quite Canadian to do so. Unfortunately, I can't fake it. If I don't like the band, I ain't gonna buy what they're selling. So it was with much delight, pleasure, and genuine surprise that while growing up, there was a band that blew me away, and were not only from my hometown of Toronto, but my home borough of Scarborough, Ontario, which eventually merged and became part of Toronto proper. I'm talking about Sacrifice. When I heard that Sacrifice was from Scarborough, a band whose records I had bought and were putting out these records on Metal Blade, I was again blown away. I couldn't believe anything so cool could come out of this giant wasteland that seemed to house strip mall after strip mall. But now, when you look back on it, Scarborough did have an indelible mark on pop culture as we know it. The famous Mike Myers character Wayne Campbell from Wayne's World is based on the Scarborean heavy metal rocker that, let's face it, Scarborough became known for having a lot of. Mike Myers knew this because he grew up in Scarborough. Coming from a place that yielded both Sacrifice and Wayne Campbell, is it any wonder how I turned out like I did? Scarborough is much different now than it was back then, but one thing remains, my fandom for Sacrifice. Even though it wasn't out of any Scarborean allegiance that brought me into their fold, now, when traveling abroad, touring in my own band, I wave the flag for Sacrifice any chance I get. If someone knows we're from Canada and mentions Sacrifice, they automatically have my attention. It could be Cindy Crawford standing in front of me, but if someone behind her was sporting an old-school Sacrifice t-shirt, I would first look over her shoulder to figure out who it was wearing the shirt. This past February, Sacrifice played the Inertia Entertainment 20th anniversary show in Toronto. The Opera House, a venue I've seen many shows in, was packed to the rafters. It was a very special night for me because I got up on stage with the band and sang Motorhead's Iron Fist. It was more than just a guest spot appearance. For me, it was a full circle moment. Probably the one time I ever walked on stage and afterward came close to waterworks due to the heaviness of the moment. It's funny, you can travel around the world and be accepted on many stages in many scenes, but it's always your hometown scene and the people that made that scene that you always crave acceptance from. After that night, I earned my stripes, and no matter what anyone says about me or my band, nobody, and I mean nobody, can take away the fact that I sang with sacrifice. It is not just a feather in my cap, but rather a plumage in my cap. That night, when I left the venue, I was walking on clouds, adrenaline still pumping through my veins hours later, reliving the moment over and over again until sleep took me. This episode is with Rob Urbanati, singer of Sacrifice and member of a band, much like last episode's 135 with the guys from Death Angel, a band that means more to me than just the music, but whether they know it or not, encouraged me, inspired me, gave me incentive, and became the example that I followed. And I hold them in part responsible for me doing what I do today, being in a band myself, playing music. Even to this day, my path is crossing with Sacrifices in a way I hadn't anticipated. We are in the middle of recording our new album with none other than Eric Ratz, who, of course, co-produced the Sacrifice album, Apocalypse Inside, in 1993. One thing I want to mention here, this talk with Rob happened after the Calgary Metal Fest, which was billed as a historic night of Canadian metal with Annihilator, Exciter, Razor, and Sacrifice all playing together for the first time, put on by Big Nate Productions. For legal reasons, the festival wasn't allowed to use the title of Big Four when addressing these four bands together. Rob and I mentioned this on the podcast, and go one further and say there's actually a Big Five in Canada, which would include Voivod. But here, in the intro of this podcast episode, I want to go even one further and say there's really a Big Six if one was to include Malhavik. Anyways, this podcast is supported by Skull Candy Headphones and Blue Mic Microphones and Chino Locos Restaurants. When I want a fish burrito, I want it stuffed with chow mein noodles. And if you are listening to this on either iTunes or SoundCloud, please leave a rating or a review. It helps the podcast's profile, especially on iTunes because we were recently spotlighted as in the What's Hot section on the iTunes store. So it works. So please leave a rating if you can. Okay, here we go. Rob Urbanati is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's go out down for free. I'm sad glad I like to sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down.
What? What did you just say to me? You don't want to listen to the Danko Jones podcast. Well, fuck you, my man. You want me to take my fist and shove it up your ass? Because I will. Don't you dare say that shit about Danko Jones. Man, his podcast is the best in the whole world. Did you hear me? The best podcast in the whole fucking world.
Listen to the Danko Jones podcast. Listen to the Danko Jones podcast. If you have nothing, now you have something to do. Listen to the Danko Jones podcast. Listen to the Danko Jones podcast.
I began to notice that Danko was completely nuts. He'd suddenly start making weird sounds and scary faces for no reason at all. And it wasn't just embarrassing, it was alarming. And now, since I'm a devout Catholic, I asked my local parish priest about Danko's condition, and he was sure Danko was possessed by Satan. So I helped my priest perform an exorcism on Danko that very day, but it didn't work. The dude is seriously screwed, and according to my parish priest, will burn in hell for all of eternity if he doesn't get himself checked out.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones podcast starts! No!
No!
Rob, it's great to have you on this podcast. I know you and I have been talking about doing this for a year, over a year, like...
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. And then what got, like, it didn't remind me, but I just was kind of like, fuck, I should get my ass in gear, is I saw your tweet, and it was to promote the Calgary Metal Fest that just happened, and you were on another podcast. What was it? Getting Hard.
Nate's Backyard.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so I was like, fuck, I was supposed to have Rob on last year. So I listened to the podcast.
Same thing, actually.
Yeah. I was like, fuck. And so I downloaded the episode. I listened to the episode, and it was really great, and it was funny, and it was very informative. So I guess my next question is, how was the Calgary Metal Fest?
Oh, it was amazing. It was really, really cool. It was, I guess, something that everybody kind of wanted to do, and other promoters have talked about, but it just didn't really come through with various bands. But, you know, the core, like, you know, I guess Razor and Sacrifice are usually always mentioned in there. So this finally happened. And yeah, like, even I talked to Nate after the show, and Dave Carlo said that was probably his career highlight doing the show. And it was great for everybody involved.
I think I heard what ended up happening was I went back and I trolled some of the older episodes, and I did listen to the Dave Carlo one, which is very hilarious. It seemed like you were having a blast, because I was watching your Twitter feed, and you're taking photos. Like, were you guys on last?
No. We were on second.
Oh, so,
but yeah, I was having a blast. Like, I mean, you probably saw I tweeted like Exciter's in the middle of best sound check I've ever seen or something like that. And it was like, it made me so happy. You know, they're one of those bands that I didn't think I'd ever see, like the original Exciter back together. And they're a big band from my childhood, obviously. And, you know, I told the story on stage, like I was probably 15 years old watching them at the concert hall. I was right up at the front, like right in front of John Ricci. And like, it was kind of hard for me to contain myself when they're, you know, doing Violence and Force. They did about half the song in soundcheck, and they stopped. I just yelled, "Fucking right!" You know, it was pretty amazing. So yeah, it was great for everybody.
I hope this guy Nate does it again, because it was I think it's it just gave some sort of real authenticity to Canadian metal and pride when these four bands got together. For like, I think people are calling it like the big four of Canadian metal. This is what I've heard.
Yeah. He was somehow not legally allowed to say that. But,
wow. That's crazy.
That's people were pretty much calling it.
Well, for me, I mean, the big four, I mean, you can swap in a couple of other bands in there as well. So they can have the title big four, but maybe the big five would be good.
Yeah, like Voivod
would be, yeah. That would be, for me, that would be the one that I would say throw in Voivod next year, and holy shit, I might be fucking having to take the flight over.
Yeah, there's a lot of happy people that night, for sure, bands included.
Yeah, I could feel that it was a very kind of almost like a high school reunion kind of vibe, I would imagine.
Well, it's always like that when we play with Razor. Because, you know, we've got so much history with them. We played with them probably more than any other band. And we're really good friends that don't really see each other that often. But it's really like when we get to, like, we were sharing a room backstage and stuff. And it's just like we'd never, you know, no time has passed when we get together with those guys. And it's always amazing to hang out with them. You know, we miss those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I understand.
And to hang out. Exciter was cool too.
Sorry, you broke up there. To hang out with
Exciter was really cool too.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it comes at a time when Annihilator is actually very active in Canada. So that was good timing.
Yeah, I don't think they, like, I mean, they've been concentrating in Europe, I guess, and haven't played in Canada that much, but I guess they're everywhere they're playing, they're drawing quite a bit. So yeah, I think they're rediscovering Canada.
Yeah. And I think it just had to like take some time and things come around again. And I think there's a renewed interest in Canadian metal. And when you look back, you go, wow, like these bands maybe never achieved the success of like a Metallica or a Slipknot or whatever, but they're timeless records that it was very interesting to hear the episode with Dave Carlo because Nate brought on this Uber Razor fan. And then Dave goes, how old are you? And the guy goes, I'm 26. And this guy was going so deep into the Razor catalog that like Dave had to ask him like, who are you? And so I think that with the advent of the internet and just the ability for anyone to quickly find out about the whole Sacrifice catalog or the whole Razor catalog, they can really kind of bring up to speed as to who all these bands are. You've got this renewed interest now, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel it in the air.
No, it's true. Like we get the same thing. Like I'll be talking to somebody at a show and they'll be saying the same thing, like going way back and knows all kinds of info and asking me about things I've forgotten about. And I'll say, how old are you? And it's the same thing. And you meet guys all the time that, you know, like actually at the show, I met that guy who's there with his dad and he's like, yeah, I love Sacrifice. You know, my dad got me into the band and things like that happen all the time.
And
yeah,
I mean, that's the thing is everywhere we go, when people find out we're from Toronto, it's like, well, a lot of the times we get the whole, you know, oh, you like Rush? You know, that's pretty much a standard. But we do get a lot of, like, have you heard of Sacrifice? And that starts a conversation, you know. And I remember at Wacken, we played Wacken. And I love going to the metal shopping area. They have this metal market area. And there's like, I don't know if I should tell you this, but I got a Sacrifice patch there.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where we go. There's like, geez, we're just down in Peru. That they had better Sacrifice shirts than we had in these places. So, actually, the bootleg place had better shirts than any band's original merchandise, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I got also a Sacrifice pin.
Yeah, you can't stop. I mean, it's not. We're happy that people are wanting to do that. You know, it doesn't faze us. That's cool.
Sorry for supporting them, Rob, against you guys.
No, you support them all you want because we don't have patches.
yeah, that's why I was like, wow, this is and it's orange too.
Or very rarely we have patches anyway.
The Sacrifice logo is an orange.
That, I have not seen that one.
Yeah, yeah. I believe it is on my jean jacket now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm proud.
And, you know, there's a few things like we could go over, but, you guys do still manage to tour quite a bit. Like we just mentioned the Calgary Metal Fest, it just happened. Didn't you guys play somewhere in Winnipeg or was it somewhere in Manitoba recently?
We did a couple across Canada last year. That was, we played Vancouver and Winnipeg. This year, for the most part, we're kind of stuck to only doing about three shows a year, honestly. This year, we've just done Toronto. We played Peru and we did this Calgary thing. That's all we have booked for this year.
How does Peru pop up? Like Peru's... Like that isn't really, we've never played Peru and I know South America is such a vibrant metal scene, but how does like a Peru get in touch with Sacrifice?
Well, usually it's through, they'll contact one of the guys through Facebook or something. We've had like, I don't know why, but South America has always had really intense, crazy Sacrifice fans all over the continent and especially on the west coast of South America. And we've been offered shows quite a few times and this time we said, yeah, let's do it, you know. And we talked to, I think it was maybe our manager Sean talked to Caton from High Roxy saying, yeah, this promoter's amazing, you guys have to do it. And we're really glad we did. It was a really great experience. It treated us great down there. The fans were amazing. The show was amazing. Lima's a beautiful city. And yeah, we had a really great time. It was actually one of the best times we've had as a band going away.
That's the thing. You mentioned Caton. Like, that's another band I see going to South America all the time. But I think Caton has really pushed Hyrax forward as a full-time thing. A lot of people don't realize abroad that, you know, Sacrifice is a band that's in like three different places in the world. So it's not as if you guys can get together and jam every Friday or something.
Yeah, there's basically Gus and me that live here, and Joe's in Detroit and Scott's in Vancouver. So, you know, we keep the base solid here. We, Gus and me jam quite a bit and, you know, make sure we're tight. So when the other guys come in, it doesn't take long for us to get it together. I mean, they're practicing at home, you know, they're making sure they know the songs before we get to wherever we're going. And yeah, it doesn't take long to get it together, but it does make it difficult for us to do these shows.
You know, like last time back in February, you mentioned that to me before, that like you and Gus are always at your space, even though Joe and Scott are, you know, in different parts of the continent. Okay, so you run through Sacrifice material, but do you end up like writing riffs that are completely original and completely new that might not even be for Sacrifice, like a completely different project between the two of you?
Not really, but usually our rehearsal consists of we set up and I'll plug in and we'll just jam for about an hour, like not playing anything other than what's ever on the top of our heads. And every once in a while, I'll bring my little Zoom mic down and I'll say, stop, let's record this. And there's times where we'll, you know, go off into like a more like rock direction, or we're just jamming, but none of it is really going anywhere other than we'll take the odd part here or there, record it, and, you know, make a song out of it. So there's no side project or anything.
Yeah, that's the first thing that popped into my head when I heard you say it back in February.
Yeah, we've thought about it, but we're trying to focus on getting some kind of EP together, and there's always a show coming up, and we don't have that much time to rehearse. Usually it's a Sunday, you know?
You know, leading up to talking to you, I contacted Craig Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, yeah, I'm going to be talking to Rob in a couple of days. And I go, I will not ask him about a new record, because that's probably the last thing he wants to talk about. But you brought up the EP. So I've heard that thrown around before. I think I even heard it on Nate's podcast. There is kind of an EP that you guys kind of want to get off the ground, right?
Yeah, we're just waiting for, you know, that divine spark to hit. It's we have stuff written, but we're at the point, like, we don't want to release anything unless it's really moving us. You know, we have some songs, like, I'm gonna lie, like, there's some pretty good stuff, but I always say, until we get to that song where when we go to rehearsal, that's the first thing we want to play when we get in the room. You know, right. That's when we know we've hit it.
Yes, I understand that feeling. Yeah, for sure.
And we're at the point, too, we don't really need to release anything. You know, we're not a touring band. We don't need the touring cycle record out kind of thing. And we have our back catalog that stood up for, you know, 30 years or whatever. So we don't really need to. If we're going to release something, it's because we want to and we want people to hear it. It's not just because, yeah, here, let's put this out kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. Like, you guys are in a situation, much like Metallica, is anything new that they release or you release will be put up against albums that everybody has been listening to for decades, like 20 years even. So,
yeah,
you know, how do you compete with something that, you've been listening to through your whole life experience. Like, oh, this thing followed you through high school, through your first job, your first girlfriend, you know, that kind of, those kind of like experiences. And then you put out something new and you're like, how do you live up to that? So I get it.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's, you know, how many times have you heard a band that's been around for as long as we have and they'll put something in and you're like, that's okay, you know, and we don't want that. We want you to put it on and say, this is awesome. You know, sounds like Sacrifice.
Well, when Joe sent me, he sent me one kind of demo thing from Ones I Condemn. I guess that was back in 08.
Yeah.
It could have been, yeah.
It was probably around then, yeah.
I think he sent me like just a little clip. He goes, hey, check this out. Like, and I remember it was in Bergen, Norway. We were on tour. It was in Bergen, Norway. I got Joe's email. I heard the track. I was in the dressing room, in the club. We went on stage. We did sound check and we wrote a song on stage because I was so pumped.
That's amazing.
I swear to God. And I can tell you the song. It's a song called Full of Regret. We did a whole video for it. Lemmy's in the video. And that opening riff was written on the soundcheck stage in Bergen, Norway, after Joe sent me a little clip from, I think it was Hiroshima, like off Ones I Condemn.
That's an amazing story.
I can't forget it because I was so inspired, like pumped.
I know the feeling. I get that all the time when it can come from a movie even.
Yeah, like it was weird because I just started playing the riff and then we all just started jamming on it. And then we got off stage and a couple of people in our crew were like, don't forget that riff. Whatever you play, don't forget it. You should record that right now.
I was going to ask you that. How do you do that at soundcheck and not forget it?
Well, when we all kind of look at each other that we're on something good now with, you know, iPhones and stuff and voice memo apps and stuff, one of us or two of us will whip out our phone and just record it. That's what we've done. And in fact, on this new record we're working on, we kind of hit a wall writing songs at one point and we needed one more song. And then JC sent me this voice memo from soundcheck. Actually, that was in Norway too, but it was on our last tour of this riff that we were all jamming on at soundcheck. And we wrote the song for the new record like months after we had forgotten about the riff, but he had recorded it.
I always find, I don't know if you get this too, but that when you're at that point where you need one more song and you're having trouble, that last song usually turns out pretty good. It might take a bit longer, but it usually comes out all right.
It's so true. And this new album we're working on, it's funny because Eric was just like, both Eric and JC were feeling we needed two or three more songs. And I think those were the best songs we wrote at the end.
Cool.
Yeah. So
I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, can't wait, man. That's the connection we have right now doing our new album is Eric Ratz produced or co-produced Apocalypse Inside with Dave Carlo.
Yes, sir. I think it was actually Ratz. It might have been his first album he did, I think.
Yeah. Or the first album he like got producer credit on or something.
Yeah, yeah. It was weird how we found him too. We were in a rehearsal building and there's a band down the hall. I think they're called Mind Rape and they did a demo and we were saying, this sounds pretty good. Who did it? And they said, this guy, Eric at Phase One. We're saying, oh, Phase One. Yeah, we've recorded there before. So that's how we picked him.
And then since then he's done,
all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
All kinds of stuff, including Cancer Bats. I saw Scott today and you are on a Cancer Bats album.
Yeah. And the song's called Rats, believe
it. Yeah. That's what I always wanted to know. Does that kind of have to do with Eric or like what?
The lyrics are pretty harsh and I hope not. No, I might have said something about that, but, Yeah, as I said, you should spell it with a Z or something.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's
Yeah,
cool.
that was actually the first time I'd seen Eric since probably since we did Apocalypse Inside in '93. I think I did that Cancer Bats guest thing in it was probably around 5 years ago or so. So it's quite a bit of time between there.
Whoa,
Yeah.
wow. Well, that's the thing about Apocalypse Inside is, okay, so going back to South America, Marquee Records out of Brazil, they reissued the first three Sacrifice albums on vinyl. Did Apocalypse Inside ever get a vinyl reissue?
Actually, they did CD. They didn't do any vinyl, Marquee.
Oh.
Apocalypse Inside did come out on vinyl. The name of the label is escapes me right now. I think they're based out of Italy, and they did a really tight pressing. Like it was only might have been 500 or 1,000 copies,
Oh
and,
wow.
but that was the only time it's ever been pressed. Yeah, on vinyl.
That's interesting. And did you say when it came out? Like fairly
It
new.
was about 2 years ago.
Oh crap.
Yeah.
I gotta track that down then.
Well, I'll see if I have two, I'll give you one.
Oh,
But
that'd
I might only have one.
be You never know what you find in those like metal markets in Europe. That to me is like Disneyland.
Yeah,
You
see,
just
that's the
never
thing
know.
for we've only played once in Europe, so we haven't really got to experience that as much.
Well, you guys should be playing those metal festivals. Of course, it's your schedule. It isn't anything else. Because I think if your name was bandied around, I think, and you guys had the time, I think you could fill it. But of course, everybody's got there's four different lives going on. So
Yeah.
I get it. I get it, man.
Well, it's not like we don't get offers. We do get offers. It's just timing's everything with this band, unfortunately.
Well, who reissued those albums then on vinyl? Because
Oh,
I
that was War. Sorry, that was War on Music. They're based in Winnipeg.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, I'm getting confused, but I gotcha, I gotcha. For some reason, because I mean, Sean reached out to me like 5 years ago about the Forward to Termination liner notes, which I wrote, and I was so honored to write them. But I don't know. Did they ever get released or?
They're going to be.
Oh man, I can't wait.
Yeah,
Seriously, can't wait.
Cyclone Empire out of Germany is going to be re-releasing them, and yes, finally that will see the light of day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, finally. I know it's been a long time. Sorry, Danko.
I think, well, no, it's fine. I mean, every few months I'll email Sean going, "Hey, what's the update on that?" Because I basically want, like, I just want to see it. I just want to like ha hold it in my hands.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, it'd be cool. But yeah, anyways, I mean, that's great. Things to track down and at least they're, doing this podcast with you, usually or doing the podcast with people. Oftentimes they have things that they want to plug or promote. I could use that as something to promote for you. Like there is stuff coming out.
Yeah, I know, and I'm the worst one for plugging stuff because I can't even tell you the details on a lot of it. I'm terrible at it, but it's just cool to talk to you nonetheless.
Yeah, and isn't it weird that we're both in Toronto talking on
I
Skype?
know, I know. It's so lame. I know. I don't get out much.
Well, I did 8 hours of guitar today at Vespa and my ears are shot, so I'm so like I can't really this is the best way to do it right now anyway, so.
Yeah, I agree. I know. I find the studio completely draining. It's especially once you get to the vocal part, you get home, you're just done.
Oh. Yeah, you
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
Oh my God. The rhythm guitars are those are easy. And
Yeah,
then,
that's fine. That doesn't take much out of you. Once you get
yeah.
the vocals going, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
How many can you do in a day?
In terms of vocals for songs, I think I could do like two a day.
Yeah, I'm about the same.
Because the way Eric does it, he works really hard. And I can't do more than two, I don't think. So, and we're heading into vocals like around October. So, you know, the weather's getting colder. You know, guitarists and drummers, they don't get it. But, you know, for a vocalist, it's like, fuck, it's going to be cold come mid-October. And my voice is going to be, it's just, you know.
When it gets dry, too, I find that affects me.
Yeah, especially the way you sing. I mean, people probably go, oh, yeah, you just got to scream. But actually, you need to take care of your voice even more.
Yeah, I don't know if this happens to you, but if we're playing somewhere and there's some band playing a club the night before, I can't go.
Oh, you know, no.
Because more than yelling, screaming, anything, talking above music in a crowd destroys my voice more than anything.
I can't do it. That's why I usually am. It seems like I'm a diva while I'm on tour, because I don't hang out with the, if we leave the bus or the venue, I don't go out if I don't have to, because I got to preserve my voice. But our crew understands, everybody knows the routine. It's like, you know, I'm the first to bed because I got to get my 8 hours, you know?
Yeah. So, I know, it sucks being the singer, right?
It really does. I mean, if you really want to have a good time out on the road, I don't think anyone should be a singer then, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you get the sniffles or something. It's, you have to get on stage and do it no matter what, you know, it's tough.
Yeah. Like if you get a cold or the sniffles, most people just go, oh, I think I'm coming down with a cold. But for singers, it's like absolute terror.
Yeah. It's torture. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, you know,
that's my biggest fear, actually, before we go to a show, because we, like I said, we play so few shows, is getting sick.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. That's the big thing for me, too. I that's why whenever we travel is like the guys will be wearing a long sleeved shirt on, and I'm wearing a coat with a scarf. Look insane.
I'm bathing in hand sanitizer all day long.
Yeah. 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 That's basically it. Yeah, like that's the thing. And you can't complain about it, because they just go, oh, just what's the problem?
Yeah, I know. They don't understand.
Nobody understands.
And I know, too, when we get together, like, you know, before Calgary, we get together in the rehearsal room when we're there. And I take it really easy on the vocals before the show. Right. I'm just doing it to make sure I remember the lyrics and stuff. And I can see sometimes the guys are worried, you know, is Rob losing here? But they know I take it easy before the show. Once I hit the stage, they're okay.
Yeah. I mean, if there was any hangers on or any people who are just dropping by to check it out, they'll be like, oh, I don't know about tonight's show. They don't understand. They don't get the whole process of it. Sometimes it's like banging your head against a wall.
Yeah.
But as long as your crew and your guys, everybody around you is on the right page, then it's all cool.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll go out and at rehearsal and just give them at least one song of a good performance, and just to put them at ease. You know, when I started singing like this when I was 17 or whatever, I didn't think I'd still be doing it at 49.
Yeah, and you just need more care for your voice.
Exactly, yeah.
And speaking about shows and reunions, I have to make mention and thank you guys. I mean, I can't believe we've talked this long without me doing it. I should have said it right off the bat, but getting to sing with you guys this past February in Toronto at the Opera House for the Inertia 20th anniversary was a dream come true for me.
That was really cool for us too. And I don't even remember how that came about. I think we were just playing Iron Fist at Jam. I think one of us said, why don't we ask Danko if he wants to sing this with us? Because, you know, the Lemmy thing just happened and, you know, just seemed like, you know, it was right.
Oh, and yeah, yeah.
We're happy you agreed to it. And it was, people always ask me about that, you know.
Yeah, because
talk about how amazing it was and stuff. Actually, that podcast that you mentioned I did with Nate we were talking about it on there, I think, too.
I heard it, yeah.
Yeah.
After you told me to check it out, I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. But his surprise is, I think, what a lot of people at the venue were sharing as well. It's like, what the fuck? I don't understand how these two worlds are colliding right now. But no one booed, so it was.
No, I think most people know what intense metal fan you are, so you know what I mean. And I don't. Everybody I know likes music, you know, whether they're into Grave or they're into Refused. You know what I mean?
Right.
You seem like, you know, you're loved across the board. So.
Well, it's nice to know that, and it was a good feeling after I got off stage that like people were pretty receptive to it. And that's the thing is, I find in metal these days, you know, younger people get, you know, they get so intense about this new thing that they found that they need a few years to like settle back and go, well, rock and roll's cool too. And I think it takes a few years for new metalheads to like get into the rock, you know, sometimes, and then they figure it out.
Yeah, I actually went through that myself when I was younger. You know, I grew up obviously listening to classic rock and Kiss and Van Halen and,
right,
you know, then, you know, evolved into Maiden and Priest, Motorhead, and, you know, eventually on to heavier things. And once I think I got into the Venom area, I think I let go of the classic rock for a little while. And but it, I mean, it wasn't long before I came back to it.
Yeah, it's pretty much my path as well. When I got into metal, I just got in so into metal, and then punk rock, and then I let go of metal for a few years, and then got back into it. So, you know, it just things go in cycles, I think.
Yeah, I think it's pretty common with the metal kids.
Yeah, I'm just glad that, you know, there's enough of an openness in the metal scene to allow for, you know, rock bands to at least get on stage and sing one song.
Yeah, well, so. I mean, it's a lot. I think people are a lot more open to different music now than they were back in our time.
Yeah, it was a lot more hardline. But that morning that I sang with you guys, the morning of, I actually was at the hospital. Because I cut my hand open and I needed 5 stitches. So I was like, is this, what kind of omen is this, man, for tonight? So I had my hand wrapped and I was like, I couldn't shake people's hands. So I felt really like awkward and weird. But when I was on stage with you guys and I had this hand wrapped and I was singing, holding the mic with my left hand, I was like, fuck yeah, man. I bled for metal today. I bled today to get here.
Man, I remember when you came in to do that at rehearsal, you just kind of came in and took off quick. And yeah, we were all like, oh my God, it's amazing.
I would do it again. And I would like, man, I was so hyped. I was so nervous and so hyped when I went to the rehearsal space with you guys.
Well, I guess we kind of were too, you know, but we knew it would be great.
Well, I mean, I think I gave Gus's wife my phone.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, please take as many photos of this as you can possibly take. Cause I just, this is such a moment for me.
I remember being up there thinking, I hope someone out there, I was kind of scanning the crowd a couple of times. I hope somebody's taping this.
I was too. That's what I was hoping for. And there's some really great shots from like pro photographers that I saw online. I think BWBK posted it online.
Yeah, I saw a few of them too. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a great shot that Amy, Joe's wife, took of Joe, myself, and Brian Taylor, when you guys were about to go on, I think Noel was talking and they're doing the whole Inertia 20th anniversary kind of speech and presentation. So the three of us were looking on and she took a photo of the three of us. And that photo is so, I was like almost, I had a little frog in my throat when I saw it because being
I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, being sandwiched between those two guys to me was just like it was super heavy. And of course, when you're there, you don't really see what's, you know, you're not really aware of, but a photo can really kind of cement a moment. So yeah. It was really kind of like, holy shit. And then when I got off stage with you guys, I was nervous because I didn't know how it really went down. And there was Brian and Junior were like, great, great, great. Well, there you go. That was great. And I was like immediately put to rest, I was immediately calmed and I was like, great, good. I can at least walk out of here without being pelted with like fucking, you know what I mean?
No, we knew that was not going to happen. I knew you had a little bit of worry about that, but we knew that was not going to be the case.
Oh man. I was just, yeah, oh man, that was such a night.
It's always special playing in Toronto. I guess it probably is for you too, but yeah, because we so seldom do, you know, and when we do, we always end up bringing out people that we haven't seen for years. And like you said, Brian Taylor was there. He was hanging out with us the whole night, and it was great to see him. He was a big part of our youth, you know. I don't know if Sacrifice really would. There's a few people. I don't know if Sacrifice ever would have done anything, but him definitely. He got us in the studio.
Yeah.
Did our first demo. Did our first three albums. We used to spend every Friday night at his place listening to new albums that came out, and you know, he's just a big part of our lives.
And for me, he is a big. Like he is a big presence for me in Toronto. And I think the fact that I can actually like go when I see him, I can actually go up to him and we can chat. If I was to tell like, you know, the 15-year-old me that I would be able to do that with that guy behind the counter at the Peddler.
Yeah.
I would have gone, there's no way in hell you will get to that point, but it's just so cool. And I think when I saw him at your show, I was like, I think I said something like, you're here. Wow. Cause like, I don't think he ever goes to any shows anymore, you know?
Well, he doesn't live in Toronto anymore.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
He doesn't really live that close. So, I mean, it's hard enough for him to come to work, I guess, and to get him out to see a band, you know, it feels pretty fortunate when you get Brian to your shirt.
Yeah.
As you go, you know?
Yeah, like it's amazing. And I still remember the moment when he started to talk to me like I wasn't like a maggot.
Yeah, I've seen him talk to a lot of people like that.
I remember I walked out of there going, holy shit, that was amazing. So yeah, it was such a heavy moment for so many, like that night was like, wow, like a heavy moment. One after the other. And then when you go to a Sacrifice show in Toronto, you inevitably, you know, run into people you haven't seen for years. So,
yeah, I always say it's like the high school reunion for old metal guys.
Yeah, it was a really special night. It was cool. And the fact that it was at the Opera House, and, you know, I don't go to too many shows locally anymore. And, you know, I used to go to a lot of them at the Opera House when I was younger. And that whole night I was like, wow, I feel like I'm 17, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was weird.
I hear that a lot actually. And I feel like that too. Actually, when we play, feels like time stopped in 1988 or something.
Yeah.
We're all at the Siboney.
I felt it was also another heavy moment was, having Joe's, family watch him side stage. I thought that was pretty heavy. That was really nice. That was cool. Like right beside her dad. And, you know, it's like, it's so cool.
Yeah. My daughter was there as well.
Really?
Whole family was there. Yeah. I think my daughter was on the other side of the stage from Joe's kids.
Right. Yeah.
I think she was by the monitor board, but yeah, it's special. She'd actually seen us play the last time, which was like 2009. She was pretty young then, but my daughter's 17 now. So, yeah, it's amazing to be able to, you know, get her out and watch us play.
like it must be thrilling to watch like kids just go nuts over your dad singing, like where they're thrashing about. Is she into like heavy music or?
Yeah, my daughter, her musical tastes are pretty much all over the board, but I guess from growing up with me as her dad, you could put on any metal album, she'll be able to tell you what band it is, what song. So yeah, but she likes metal. She likes, you know, she likes all kinds of stuff. She likes old jazz. She likes, you know, Amy Winehouse. Everything. She's got a lot more varied music taste than her dad does. That's for sure.
Right. But I think that's such a heavy moment to like, especially at a show like that, where everyone is just like frothing at the mouth to see your dad play is heavy. I mean,
yeah, that's something that's weird. We've never really talked about. I don't know how she feels about it other than, you know, she just thinks it's cool to see her dad play live.
I just was watching Joe's daughter and I was just looking at her while you guys were playing. And I'm like, this must be so heavy for Joe to like be able to show, you know, it's not just something he like, it's not a scrapbook filled with photos going, I used to do this. It's like, it's right here. She's of age where she'll remember this and it'll make an impression and people are going batshit crazy over him, you know, like it's heavy.
Yeah. I think that was the first time Mackenzie had seen us play Joe's daughter and
right. Yeah.
Gus's daughters were there as well.
That's right. Yep. I remember Gus's daughter was there and Gus's daughter's older too, right? She's like in her teens.
Yeah. His two daughters were there. They're around 18, 19. Can't say for sure, but around there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone's kids are old enough that, you know, this is going to stick out. It's a memory that they won't forget.
Yeah.
It's cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels pretty, pretty good when you're a parent and you can do that actually. Yeah.
Cause I remember in 06, the Sacrifice reunion show, we had a gig on the 401 and I realized once we got into the van and we were driving home that you guys were wrapping up and I missed it.
Oh.
And that was in 06. So that was like 10 years ago. So maybe, maybe not everyone's kids were old enough to remember that properly. Right. But now they can.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. 2006. My daughter was too young. I think all our kids were probably too young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it's like, wow. Like, you know, everyone can remember this.
Yeah. And it's not the same. Like, I mean, I'm sure they've seen videos of us playing on YouTube or whatever, but it's not the same as when you're actually there and you can hear it and feel it and all that other stuff. Yeah.
It's like going to a sports and an actual like hockey game rather than watching it on TV.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you can smell the air. You could, you know, it's just, it's wild. I mean, you don't even have to be into sports. And if you go to a hockey game or a basketball game, you are engaged. Like you don't know who's who, but you are interested and it blows you away.
And yeah. The sounds and all that stuff. Yeah. It's a lot different.
Yeah. So yeah, I was just like, I that's what I walked away from. I'm like, that must be so fucking heavy, you know, to watch that and then just go home. And then,
and not just actually the show, like, you know, we're backstage with Brian and my daughter said, "Oh, you're Brian." Like, cause she's always asked me, I tell her stories about this and that. And she knew who he was. And he's like, "You know who, you know," she knew. So that was the first time she'd met Brian. And, I think Brian, you know, cause he'd known us since we were such, you know, young punks, and to see us now at our age and, you know, he actually said to us, "I'm glad you guys all turned out okay." You know? Yeah, it was a really, really crazy experience that night.
Yeah. All right, Rob. Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, once again, thanks for having me. Okay, Danko.
Thanks, Rob. Good night.
Have a good one. Later.
Bye.